Ever looked at a company that just seems to be, well, everywhere? You know, in your insurance policy, maybe your neighbors, definitely across continents, and you just sort of wonder, how do they really pull that off? What's the secret sauce behind that kind of consistent global success? Well, today, that's exactly what we're doing. We're diving deep into one of those organizations. On the surface, yeah, it might look like your typical, traditional insurance giant. But beneath that calm exterior, it's a really fascinating story of relentless discipline, incredibly strategic growth, and some surprisingly nimble adaptation. Our mission on this deep dive is basically to give you the express lane, the shortcut to truly understanding the Chubb Corporation, or, just Chubb, as most people call it. We've pulled together a whole stack of comprehensive investment research, detailed annual reports, sharp industry analyses. Those are your sources for today. And we're going to distill them down, get to the most impactful nuggets of knowledge and insight. Think of this as getting that well-informed expert perspective on a real global powerhouse, but without having to wade through hundreds and hundreds of dense pages yourself.
Yeah, and what makes this particularly compelling, I think, is that we're going beyond just, the balance sheet or the income statement. We're going to try and uncover the underlying business philosophy, those really shrewd strategic moves they've made, and even touch on the cultural aspects that truly define Chubb. Our aim here is for you to walk away understanding not just what Chubb is doing, but really why it matters in the bigger picture, the broader economic landscape, and how it impacts their ability to create value over the long haul.
Exactly. So if you're ready to truly get inside a company that, frankly, consistently outperforms its peers, a company that has, in a lot of ways, kind of rewritten the rule book for a very traditional industry, well, then buckle up. Let's unpack this. Okay, so we're trying to unlock the secret to Chubb's consistent outperformance, right? And our deep dive shows it really all starts with this foundational principle they keep hammering home. They insist they are first an underwriting company dedicated to the art and science of taking risk. Now, that sounds like more than just a tagline, doesn't it? What does that really tell us about their core DNA? How does it genuinely set them apart from, say, just another big financial services firm?
Oh, it's absolutely their DNA. It's not just words. You see, for many insurers, the main focus might eventually drift towards, making money from their investment portfolio. That becomes the primary profit engine. But for Chubb, that statement, first an underwriting company, it signifies this really deeply ingrained culture of insight and discipline. It's all about how they assess risk, how they price it, how they manage it. It means they're not just passively collecting premiums. They are meticulously evaluating every single risk they decide to take on. They want to understand its true potential cost and price it accordingly. And crucially, this isn't some passive thing they do. It's an active, agile strategy that really permeates the whole organization right from the top down. It's the absolute bedrock of their profitability.
Right. So that discipline, that intense focus, isn't just about, doing insurance well. It's actually the engine that's transforming Chubb's entire business profile. I mean, our sources describe them as a best-in-class operator that's actively evolving. How exactly is that playing out? What are the sort of core drivers of that long-term value creation they talk about?
That's exactly right. The central investment thesis for Chubb, if you boil it down, is precisely that. It's a premier global P&C property and casualty insurer that is leveraging its core underwriting strength to very strategically transform itself. And there are really three core pillars consistently driving their long-term value creation that come through in the research. First, it's about maintaining that absolutely best-in-class underwriting profitability we just talked about. They simply will not compromise on that. Second, they're executing these large-scale, very strategic acquisitions. And it's not just about getting bigger. It's specifically targeted for diversification, both geographically, moving into new regions, and in terms of the types of products they offer. And third, they're compounding their capital through an investment portfolio that, yes, is managed conservatively overall, but is also becoming remarkably opportunistic, especially, given the economic climate we've seen recently.
Okay, you mentioned that underwriting discipline is incredibly powerful, and it creates something called float. Now, for listeners who might not be familiar, can you break down what float actually is, and why is Chubb's approach to it such a, such a game changer?
Absolutely. Float is essentially the pool of premium money that Chubb collects from policyholders up front. They get to hold on to this money and invest it before they have to pay out any claims related to those policies. Think about it. It's like being paid to hold and invest someone else's money for a period. Now, for most insurance companies, managing this float actually has a cost, particularly if their core underwriting operations aren't consistently profitable. If they lose money on the insurance side, that eats into the benefit of the float. But here's where Chubb really stands out, where they differentiate themselves. Because of their consistent underwriting profits, remember that mid-80s combined ratio we'll get to, they're generating this capital, this float, at what's effectively a negative cost. It's essentially free money, or arguably even better than free money, that Chubb can then turn around and strategically deploy. This creates this incredible compounding advantage that is just extremely difficult for competitors to replicate if they aren't generating underwriting profits themselves. It becomes a powerful self-funding growth engine right at the heart of the business.
Wow. Negative cost float. I mean, that sounds like a phenomenal competitive advantage. What I find really fascinating here is how Chubb seems to be using that powerfully generated float as well as fuel. You mentioned these massive growth engines. What are they actively powering with this? How are they transforming this core strength into something even bigger?
Well, exactly. This negative cost float isn't just some passive benefit sitting on the balance sheet. They are actively harnessing it to drive two really significant growth vectors for the company. The first is a truly major strategic pivot towards Asia. We've seen some landmark acquisitions here. You look at their purchase of Cigna's Asia Pacific Life and Health businesses. That was a big one. And then also securing a controlling stake in China's Huatai Insurance Group after years of effort. The rationale behind this push into Asia is incredibly clear from the research. It diversifies their revenue streams massively. It significantly reduces their reliance on the more mature, perhaps slower growing U.S. P&C market. And ultimately, it should lessen the overall volatility of their business by tapping into these new high growth geographies and different product lines like life and A&H.
Okay, so that's the geographic diversification piece. Mm. And the second engine then that builds on the investment side you hinted at earlier, the portfolio becoming more opportunistic.
Exactly right. The second major growth vector is the compounding growth of their very substantial investment portfolio. You know, for years, back in the pre-2022 era of ultra-low interest rates, this portfolio was, let's say, a stable but maybe not spectacular contributor to earnings. Reliable, but not explosive. However, the shift to a higher interest rate environment since 2022 has fundamentally transformed it. It's become a primary engine of earnings growth for Chubb. And what's really important is that management isn't just passively riding this wave. They are actively amplifying this trend. They're strategically increasing their allocation to higher yielding private assets, things like private equity and private credit, moving from around 11% of the total portfolio towards a target of approximately 15%. Now, this isn't just about chasing yield blindly. It's a very intentional move. They're aiming to lock in a higher, more durable base of earnings for the future, providing a significant ongoing tailwind to profitability. It really maximizes the returns they can generate from that precious negative cost float we discussed.
So to really get Chubb's success story, we have to dig into their operational prowess. And like you said, it starts with what our sources are calling their cultural moat. This idea of being first an underwriting company, dedicated to the art and science of taking risk. It's clearly not a passive stance for Chubb, is it? It's described as this active, agile strategy, and it's underpinned by a really interesting management philosophy. The idea is to be patient in long-term strategy, but impatient in execution. How does that actually play out on the ground in their day-to-day operations?
Yeah, that philosophy, patient strategy, impatient execution, it's absolutely central to how they operate and why they succeed. Let's take a concrete example, something the research highlights from the years leading up to 2019. Chubb proactively, very deliberately, reduced its exposure in certain lines of business where they felt the pricing just wasn't adequate. The market wasn't paying enough for the risk involved. They were patient. They assessed the long-term profitability rather than just chasing top-line growth or market share at any cost. They were willing to shrink a bit if needed. But then when market conditions eventually shifted, maybe competitors who had underpriced risk were forced to pull back and rates started to harden, becoming more attractive. Well, that's when Chubb became impatient in execution. They rapidly pivoted from that defensive posture to an offensive one. They leveraged their strong balance sheet, their deep expertise, and they moved quickly to capture significant market share, but crucially, at very attractive, profitable terms. This isn't just about being cautious. It's about being incredibly shrewd, disciplined, and strategically seizing opportunities when the market truly allows for profitable growth.
Okay. And that incredible discipline, that shrewdness, it leads us directly to their standout metric, the combined ratio. Now, for our listeners, just a quick reminder, that's the key measure of an insurer's underwriting profitability, basically, the losses they pay out plus their expenses, divided by the premiums they earn. While most insurers, as the research shows, are often fighting just to break even, seeing their combined ratios hover around maybe 98%, 99%, even 100% or slightly above, Chubb consistently keeps this critical measure well below 100%, often, you know, in the mid-80s. That is a massive, massive differentiator. What does that consistently low number really tell us about their operational edge compared to their peers?
Exactly. Consistently hitting a combined ratio in the mid-80s year after year, it fundamentally transforms the entire economics of their business. Like you said, most competitors struggle around that 98 to 100% mark. That means they're barely profitable, or sometimes even unprofitable, on the pure insurance side of the house. They often have to rely heavily on their investment income just to turn an overall profit. Chubb, by contrast, profits significantly, consistently, directly from the insurance business itself. Their 86.6% combined ratio in 2024, for instance, that provides the substantial profitability cushion that most of their rivals simply do not have. And this doesn't just fuel that negative cost flow we talked about earlier. It also gives them tremendous financial flexibility. They can navigate market cycles more easily. They can strategically invest for future growth, all without constantly worrying about whether their core insurance operations are going to drag them down. It's a huge operational advantage.
And it's not just about the risks they write. It's also about how they service those policies, right?
Mm.
Our sources really highlight their commitment to paying claims fairly and promptly. I have to imagine, especially when you're dealing with their high net worth individual clients or those large, complex multinational corporations, that kind of reliability builds a very powerful sense of trust and loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
That must be critical for Chubb.
Oh, absolutely critical. In those specialized and often very complex market segments where the risks can be substantial and the clients are highly sophisticated, your brand reputation, backed up by consistently reliable and fair claim service, becomes a powerful retention tool. It's a major differentiator. These clients, they're often willing to pay a premium, sometimes a significant one, for that assurance, for that peace of mind, knowing that if something goes wrong, Chubb will be there and handle it properly. It becomes this virtuous cycle. Superior service reinforces their premium brand, which helps attract and retain more profitable clients, and that in turn further strengthens their pricing power and overall profitability.
So, yeah, it's definitely not just about being good at underwriting. It's about being good at underwriting everywhere and across a huge range of different products. Chubb's operational strength is really underpinned by this truly diversified global portfolio. I mean, the numbers are impressive. They operate in 54 countries and territories. That makes them a bona fide multinational insurer. And while the U.S. is still their largest commercial P&C market, a significant chunk, 60% of their total premium revenue in 2023, actually came from outside their North America commercial division. Looking at their geographic spread back in 2022, it's something like 61% from the U.S., but then 14% from Asia, 13% from Europe, 6% from Latin America. That's some serious global reach they've built.
And this extensive global footprint, it's complemented by a remarkably balanced business mix as well. Roughly, 62% of their revenue comes from commercial lines insuring businesses and about 38% from consumer lines insuring individuals. And within those broad categories, they offer an incredibly extensive product suite. The research mentioned over 200 distinct P&C-related products. That's massive diversification right there. But what's maybe even more impactful, thinking about their operational prowess now, are those recent acquisitions we touched on earlier. The Cigna Asia deal significantly expanded their presence, crucially adding life insurance and accident and health or A&H insurance into the mix in a big way in that region. Following that move, Asia's contribution is now getting close to 20% of their entire global insurance business. And this isn't just about growth for growth's sake. It introduces these long-duration, often high-margin earning streams from life and A&H that are not directly correlated to the ups and downs of the traditional P&C underwriting cycle. That significantly enhances the overall stability and predictability of their earnings profile. It acts as a cushion against the inherent volatility of the pure P&C market.
That's such a critical point because, the P&C insurance industry is notoriously cyclical. It's constantly swinging between these hard markets where premiums are rising, terms are tightening, and soft markets, driven by intense price competition where premiums might even fall. Our sources tell us the market seems to be stabilizing now after a pretty significant hard market phase. S&P Global, for instance, is projecting an industry-wide combined ratio of somewhere between 98% and 100% for 2024-2025. I mean, that implies most insurers are just breaking even on underwriting if they're lucky.
Precisely. And even within that broad industry trend, the pricing environment is actually quite bifurcated or split. Commercial property insurance, for example, is seeing decelerating price increases after some pretty hefty rate hikes. Meanwhile, casualty lines think liability insurance are seeing accelerating pricing pressure, largely due to this phenomenon known as social inflation. That's essentially rising claims costs driven by things like larger jury awards and lawsuits and increasingly aggressive litigation tactics. In fact, overall, U.S. U.S. commercial insurance prices even saw a slight decline in the first quarter of 2025, which was the first time that had happened since way back in 2018. So it paints a pretty challenging backdrop for the average insurer out there.
But Chubb's performance, remarkably, seems almost decoupled from these broad industry trends. While the rest of the industry is fighting tooth and nail just to break even on underwriting, Chubb's consistent mid-80s combined ratio, like that 86.6% in 2024, it provides such a substantial cushion, such a margin of safety, and they seem perfectly willing, based on the research, to prioritize that profitability over just chasing growth. They'll walk away from business, like certain professional liability lines, if the pricing isn't right. But then they'll aggressively capitalize on areas like property insurance when the conditions are favorable. That takes real discipline.
Yeah, this performance gap between Chubb and the industry average is absolutely crucial to understanding their story. While the industry is struggling near break-even, Chubb consistently maintains a highly profitable book of business, year in, year out. This strongly suggests their earnings stream is becoming significantly more durable, more predictable, than that of a typical pure-play PNC carrier. And arguably, that resilience should warrant a different, perhaps higher valuation by the market over time. And you add to that the growing contribution from those non-cyclical life and A&H businesses, particularly after the Cigna acquisition. Well, that further insulates their consolidated earnings from the inevitable PNC pricing volatility. It's a very deliberate and so far very successful strategy to build fundamental resilience into the entire enterprise.
Okay, so we're definitely painting a picture of a company that's not just big, but really strategically dominant in key areas. With that clear view of their operational strength and their strategic positioning, how does that translate into, you know, undisputed market leadership and those truly defensible competitive advantages? What's the moat around Chubb?
Well, their market leadership is pretty undeniable when you look at the data. In the huge U.S. commercial lines market, Chubb is the second largest writer overall. They're essentially in a virtual tie for the top spot with Travelers, each holding a significant 5.2% market share. That's impressive scale. But what's perhaps even more compelling is their dominance in highly specialized, often very profitable niche areas. They are the number one insurer for large corporations. They're number one in crop insurance, which is a very specialized field. And they are number one in high net worth personal lines, insuring wealthy individuals in North America. Now, these aren't commodity markets where price is the only factor. They require deep expertise, tailored solutions, and they generally command premium pricing, which Chubb clearly earns.
And their leadership isn't just in the traditional areas, right? It extends to emerging risks, too. I seem to recall them being a pretty big player in the cyber insurance market, which is obviously huge now.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating here is their ability to lead in these emerging and incredibly complex risk areas like cyber. They are, according to the research, the number one provider of U.S. cyber insurance, holding about an 8% share in 2024. This really highlights their ability to innovate, to deploy their deep underwriting expertise into new challenging risk landscapes and position themselves right at the forefront of these evolving threats. It shows they aren't just resting on their laurels. And then you layer on top of that their sheer global scale with a market capitalization exceeding $100 billion and those operations in 54 countries we mentioned, their ability to serve the largest multinational clients with a truly integrated, seamless global network is a significant differentiator that smaller, more regional players simply cannot match.
Okay, so that's their market position, dominant in key areas, global scale. But how do they keep that edge year after year? What are the true competitive advantages, those enduring moats, as you call them, that protect their business from rivals? Our sources point to several key ones. First, there's the undeniable strength of their brand and reputation. It's seen as synonymous with financial strength, superior service levels, and expert claims handling. It's incredibly valuable, especially, as you said, in those high net worth and large corporate segments where clients are absolutely willing to pay a premium for that assurance, that peace of mind.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the broader competitive landscape, these aren't just isolated strengths. They're genuinely mutually reinforcing. They create this powerful flywheel effect that's hard to stop once it gets going. The strong brand reinforces their distribution power. Their vast multi-channel distribution network is itself a huge cornerstone of their moat. Think about it. 50,000 independent agents and brokers, hundreds of thousands of exclusive life and health agents, plus over 200 direct-to-consumer digital partnerships. This intricate, extensive network provides unparalleled market reach and is incredibly difficult and costly for competitors to replicate from scratch.
Right. And that deep underwriting expertise we keep coming back to, backed by literally generations of data, that's also a huge moat, isn't it? With a corporate history that stretches all the way back to 1882, Chubb has this incredibly deep reservoir of historical data across hundreds and hundreds of product lines over decades. You combine the historical data with their sophisticated modern analytics and catastrophe modeling capabilities. Well, that enables incredibly precise risk selection and pricing. It gives them a genuine information advantage over competitors who might not have that depth of data or analytical power.
Precisely. And then there's just their sheer scale and diversification, which we touched on earlier, but is worth reemphasizing as a competitive advantage. Their very strong capital base allows them to confidently take on large, complex insurance accounts, insuring a massive construction project or a global supply chain that smaller or less well-capitalized insurers simply couldn't handle. Furthermore, that global and product diversification we discussed enables them to absorb significant losses in one specific area. Maybe a major hurricane hits Florida, or there is an earthquake in Japan while remaining profitable overall as an enterprise. This acts as both a robust defensive shield against volatility, and it allows them to strategically allocate capital to the most attractive markets and opportunities globally, playing offense when others might be forced to retreat. It's a powerful combination.
Okay, this is a really clever move they've made. In a world that's full of these, you know, insurtech startups trying to disrupt the traditional insurance industry, Chubb's taken a really unique approach to handling those competitive threats. Instead of maybe battling them head on or acquiring them outright all the time, our sources show that Chubb is positioning itself to become the technology and risk capital partner of choice for many of these players, primarily through its Chubb Studio platform. Now, this Chubb Studio, as I understand it, is a proprietary technology platform. It offers APIs, application programming interfaces that allow partners, including insurtechs, banks, retailers, you name it, to embed Chubb's insurance products directly into their own digital ecosystems, their own customer experiences. It's almost like an Intel Inside model, but for insurance. They're powering other companies' innovations.
It is shrewd, isn't it? It's a really smart way to engage with disruption. Instead of fighting head-on with these often fast-moving, agile, insurtech startups, Chubb essentially says, hey, look, you've got the cool new customer interface, the Slick app. Let us be the sophisticated, regulated, globally licensed insurance engine inside your cool new car. It's a remarkably nimble maneuver that really transforms a potential competitive threat into a strategic opportunity. By leveraging their robust balance sheet, their extensive product manufacturing capabilities across so many lines, and their global licensing footprint, they're effectively turning potential disruptors into valuable, often very low-cost, distribution channels for their own products. And the research highlights a great example, their partnership with Nubank, which is the world's largest neobank. Through Chubb Studio, Nubank can offer Chubb's insurance products directly within its app to its massive customer base, over 40 million customers. That demonstrates immense scalability with potentially minimal customer acquisition costs for Chubb. It's a classic B2B2C, business-to-business-to-consumer model executed brilliantly.
Yeah, that is clever. And just to quickly put Chubb standing into perspective with some of its major peers, if you were to glance at some of the comparison data in the research, looking at things like market cap, total premiums written, returns on equity, you'd immediately see how Chubb stacks up against major global rivals like Travelers, AIG, and Allianz. They're all huge players, of course. But what truly leaps up again and again is Chubb's combined ratio. That 86.6% figure in 2024, it's just consistently and significantly better than most of its direct peers, who often hover somewhere in the low to mid-90s. It just keeps reinforcing that core message. Their underwriting excellence is a fundamental, measurable competitive advantage. Okay, let's dive even deeper now into the numbers, the hard financials, and see how all this strategic prowess and operational excellence actually translates into concrete financial performance. Let's start again with that all-important underwriting profitability. What really stands out to me here, looking through the historical data, is the sheer consistency year after year after year.
Our sources show Chubb's P&C combined ratio has been remarkably stable, remarkably resilient, even through some major global challenges. I mean, think about the impacts of COVID-19, the high inflation period, elevated catastrophe losses in recent years, and yet their numbers remain strong. 86.6% combined ratio in 2024, 86.5% in 2023, 87.6% in 2022. That's just an incredible level of consistent, highly profitable performance in a volatile industry.
It is remarkable. And what's fascinating here, as you say, is that this isn't just a good year or two cropping up. This really appears to be a structural and enduring advantage, something deeply embedded in their operations and their culture that consistently allows them to earn a significant profit directly from the insurance business itself before they even consider any income from their investments. And this outperformance isn't fleeting. misleading. The data shows that over 3 years, 10 years, even looking back 20 years, Chubb's combined ratio has consistently beaten its peer group average by a really significant margin, somewhere in the range of 6 to 8 percentage points. That's a huge gap sustained over decades. A key contributor to this, beyond just smart risk selection, is their operational efficiency. Their P&C expense ratio, basically, the cost of running the insurance operation relative to premiums, is around 26.2%. Management rightly describes this in the reports as a meaningful and enduring advantage. This consistently lower cost structure directly flows through to enhance their underwriting margins, creating a powerful, sustainable engine for profitability.
Okay, so the underwriting engine is clearly best in class, firing on all cylinders. Now let's talk about that second engine, the investment portfolio. For a long time, as you mentioned, it was maybe seen as stable, reliable, but perhaps not the super exciting part of the story. But post-2022, with rising rates, it's really become a powerhouse, hasn't it? They're not just passively benefiting from higher rates. They're actively managing the portfolio, even strategically shifting more into higher-yielding private assets. Our sources tell us that as of the end of 2024, their total invested assets stood at a massive $151 billion. Mostly, yeah, in high-quality investment-grade fixed income, but with a growing slice, about 11% that time, and alternative assets like private equity and private credit.
Yeah, the rising interest rate environment post-2022 has indeed been a massive tailwind for them, fundamentally transforming the portfolio's contribution to the bottom line. Let's look at the numbers. Adjusted net investment income, NII, grew by an impressive 33% to hit $5.3 billion in 2023. And then it grew again by a further 19.3% to reach a record $6.4 billion in 2024. If you put that together, that's a staggering 59% increase in net investment income in just 2 years. It's phenomenal growth. And the mechanism driving this is primarily their ability to reinvest the strong operating cash flows they generate from the underwriting side at these much higher prevailing interest rates. The research gives an example. Back in the fourth quarter of 2022, their new money reinvestment rate, the yield they were getting on new investments, was around 5.6%. That was significantly higher than the portfolio's then current overall yield of about 3.6%. So as older, lower yielding bonds mature, they reinvest that cash at higher rates, creating this natural and ongoing uplift to investment income. It's acting as a crucial second engine of overall earnings growth for the company.
And crucially, they're not just relying on the passive tailwinds of higher rates. They're actively leaning into the shift, capitalizing on it. Management has stated plans to increase that allocation to private assets from around 11% towards a target of approximately 15% of the total portfolio. Now, these types of assets, private equity, private credit, have historically generated superior returns. Our sources cite figures like a 14.5% internal rate of return, IRR, and an 8% cash yield from Chubb's existing private portfolio. That's clearly a very deliberate move to boost long-term earnings power. But doesn't that also introduce a different kind of risk, maybe around liquidity or valuation complexity, especially for a company traditionally known for its conservative approach?
That's an excellent point, and it's absolutely a trade-off that management has to carefully consider and actively manage. You're right. While private assets can indeed offer the potential for superior returns over the long term, they typically come with less liquidity compared to publicly traded bonds or stocks, and their valuations can sometimes be more complex or less frequent. However, you have to remember Chubb's substantial scale, their deep internal expertise in risk management developed over decades, coupled with their very robust capital base. All of that allows them to manage these additional complexities effectively. This isn't some wild bet. It's a calculated strategic evolution of their investment strategy. This proactive portfolio management is really designed to lock in a higher base of earnings for the future, providing a more durable tailwind to profitability and further enhancing the value created by that incredibly valuable negative cost float. And they're doing all of this while, according to them, maintaining a disciplined approach to risk within their overall asset liability matching framework. It's about optimizing returns within acceptable risk parameters.
Okay, so all of this strong underwriting discipline, combined with this smart, evolving investment management, it then translates into really strong returns on capital for shareholders and maintains a very robust balance sheet. Our sources highlight some impressive figures here. A core operating return on equity, ROE, of 13.9% in 2024, and an even higher core operating return on tangible equity, ROT, which excludes goodwill from acquisitions, of 21.6% in that same year. Those are truly top-tier returns in the insurance sector.
And that strong balance sheet underpinning these returns is absolutely critical. It provides the financial flexibility not only to absorb unexpected shocks like a major catastrophe event or a market downturn, but perhaps even more importantly, it gives them the firepower to aggressively pursue those strategic growth opportunities we talked about earlier, particularly the major acquisitions in Asia. Without that balance sheet strength, those deals would be much harder, if not impossible, to execute. tangible book value per share, which is a really key measure of long-term value creation for shareholders as it reflects the core equity growth, increased by a remarkable 21.3% in 2023 alone. And it stood at a healthy $112.64 as of the second quarter of 2025, according to the latest figures cited. That consistent compounding of tangible value really underscores the quality of the company's earnings and its disciplined approach to capital management over time. And it's not just us saying they're strong. Their financial strength is also recognized externally by the major rating agencies. They hold top-tier ratings, AA from S&P Global Ratings and A++ Superior from AM Best, which is actually the highest rating available in the insurance industry. That external validation is crucial for maintaining client confidence, especially with large corporate customers.
Yeah, and if you were to look at a summary table of their historical financials, maybe pulling data from, say, 2022-2024, like the research does, you'd clearly see that consistent growth trend in consolidated net premiums written. You'd see that consistently low P&C combined ratio we keep highlighting, staying well below peers. And you'd definitely see that accelerating adjusted net investment income, particularly after 2022. It really paints a clear, compelling picture of a financially robust and very strategically managed company that seems to be really hitting its stride right now.
Right, because it's clearly not enough just to be excellent operationally. You also have to demonstrate growth over time. And Chubb's organic growth, even before considering acquisitions, looks genuinely impressive, especially how they're targeting these high potential emerging markets for the future.
Our sources tell us they had robust consolidated net premiums written growth. That's overall premium growth of 13.5% in 2023. That was followed by global P&C premium growth of nearly 10% in 2024. And importantly, this growth has been pretty well balanced across both their commercial lines and their consumer lines, which shows broad strength across the entire business, not just relying on one segment.
Indeed. And a key part of this organic growth blueprint, as you mentioned, is their explicit, very strategic focus on emerging markets. Asia and Latin America are specifically identified in their reports and presentations as absolute priority regions for future growth, both in P&C lines and in consumer insurance lines like A&H and Life. Chubb already holds a strong leadership position in these regions, particularly as the number one direct marketer of accident and health insurance. Their strategy there is highly sophisticated. It's not just about planting a flag. They aim to leverage their global capabilities, their scale, their technology, their product expertise, but combine that with maintaining a truly deep local presence and understanding of each market. This comprehensive approach is deliberately designed to capture the significant growth potential coming from the expanding middle class in these economies and the corresponding increase in insurance penetration rates as wealth grows. It's a very forward-looking and quite deliberate strategy for sustained organic expansion looking beyond the mature markets.
Okay, so strong organic growth is one part of the blueprint. But beyond that, inorganic growth, specifically through strategic mergers and acquisitions, or M&A, is clearly a huge pillar for Chubb. I mean, they have a proven long-term track record here, executing something like $47 billion worth of transactions over the last 18 years or so. That's not just opportunistic deal-making. That feels like a core competency for them. And their recent activity really reveals this deliberate multi-billion-dollar strategic pivot we've been discussing.
That's absolutely right. These aren't just random one-off deals they're doing. These recent big moves, particularly in Asia, represent fundamental multi-billion-dollar strategic pivots that are actively transforming Chubb's entire business mix. They're consciously building a more resilient, more diversified, and ultimately faster-growing global enterprise positioned for the decades to come. You take that Cigna Asia acquisition back in July 2022, a $5.36 billion deal. That single transaction immediately boosted their Asia-Pacific portfolio to around $7 billion in annual premiums. But crucially, it wasn't just about gaining scale in a high-growth region. It strategically added high-margin, non-cyclical accident and health and life insurance businesses into their portfolio in a significant way. As we discussed, that critically reduces the overall earnings volatility of Chubb's consolidated results. It was expected right from the start to be immediately accretive to both earnings per share EPS and return on equity ROE. And the reported synergies have actually come in higher than their initial estimates, really demonstrating smart capital deployment and effective integration.
And the Huatai Group acquisition in China, that seems even more significant in some ways, doesn't it? Especially given the context. After a remarkable, persistent 20-year effort navigating complex regulations, Chubb finally gained majority control in 2023, managing to increase its ownership stake to 83.2%, This apparently made them the first foreign financial institution ever to gain majority control of a Chinese financial services holding company, one that includes PNC Insurance, life insurance, asset management, and even mutual fund subsidiaries. That just sounds like an unprecedented strategic coup.
It's colossal. It really is. It provides Chubb with unprecedented access, a unique foothold into China's vast and still rapidly growing insurance market, which is, let's not forget, the second largest insurance market in the entire world. Management views this not as a quick win, but as a truly long-term strategic investment. They expect Huatai to become a meaningful contributor to revenue and earnings over time as they gradually integrate it further and leverage their global expertise within this enormous domestic Chinese market. And crucially, as we've said, these major acquisitions, Cigna Asia, Huatai, they are not merely opportunistic grabs. They represent a fundamental business shift. They are deliberately de-risking the overall enterprise from its historical heavy concentration in the mature cyclical US PNC market. And they are aligning the company firmly with the powerful secular trend of wealth creation and rising insurance demand across Asia. It's truly a foundational realignment for Chubb's future growth trajectory.
And driving all of this strategic vision and execution is Evan Greenberg, their chairman and CEO. He is widely recognized throughout the industry, according to our sources, as a highly skilled operator and a very disciplined capital allocator. He has a strong long-term track record. And the company's overall approach to capital allocation seems incredibly balanced and very shareholder-friendly. It's all funded by their robust operating cash flow, which, as the research notes, hit a record $15.9 billion in 2024. That's a lot of cash to deploy, and they deployed across three clear priorities, consistently communicated. First, investing back into the business for organic growth. Second, funding those strategic M&A opportunities like the transformative deals we just discussed. And third, consistently returning any excess capital back to shareholders.
Yeah, and this kind of consistent, disciplined capital allocation year after year after year, especially that incredible 32-year dividend increase streak, that really speaks volumes about the underlying health, the cash generation capability, and the quality of management of the business, doesn't it? In May 2025, as you noted, shareholders approved the 32nd consecutive annual dividend increase. That is a remarkable hallmark of a stable, highly cash-generative business, and it signals management's long-standing commitment to returning capital reliably to its owners. And beyond just the dividends, they also maintain an active share repurchase program, using buybacks as another tool to return capital when they see value. For instance, the research mentions $676 million spent on share repurchases just in the second quarter of 2025. This disciplined, consistent, and balanced approach to capital allocation is absolutely a key component of their long-term value creation model for shareholders.
Okay, even with all this incredible strength, this strategic vision, this operational excellence, no company operates in a vacuum, right? There are always risks and headwinds to navigate. And as a leading global property insurer, Chubb obviously has significant exposure to losses from natural catastrophes, think hurricanes, wildfires, severe storms, floods. Our sources point out a worrying trend here. Global insured catastrophe losses have exceeded $100 billion for four consecutive years now. That's well above the long-term historical average, and it seems influenced by a combination of climate change impacts and increasing urbanization, putting more valuable property in harm's way. That has to be a huge challenge for the entire insurance industry, including Chubb.
It absolutely is. And this raises a really important question. How does a major global insurer, inherently exposed to the increasing frequency and severity of these climate-related events, actually adapt its strategy? What's fascinating about Chubb's approach, based on the research, is that their strategy isn't just about managing their own potential losses from catastrophes. It's also about becoming a strategic partner for their clients as they navigate their climate transition challenges. It's quite innovative. They seem to have a dual approach here. First, through something called Chubb Resilient Services, they offer consulting-style services. They leverage sophisticated climate models and their deep risk engineering expertise to help their clients, particularly large corporations, assess, quantify, and ultimately mitigate their own physical climate risks. And second, they've established Chubb Climate Plus Say, which is a dedicated underwriting unit specifically designed for businesses involved in the transition to a low-carbon economy. This unit focuses on ensuring risks in areas like renewable energy generation, alternative fuels development, carbon capture technologies, and so on. So this two-pronged approach effectively allows them to monetize their deep risk management expertise. It simultaneously helps them improve the underwriting of their own insurance portfolio by better understanding climate risks. And it creates potential new non-correlated revenue streams from these fee-based consulting services. It's an incredibly proactive and quite innovative way to try and turn a significant threat into a potential business opportunity.
That makes sense. And then, of course, there are the broader macroeconomic sensitivities that affect almost everyone. We saw how high inflation, particularly from 2021 to 2022, significantly impacted claim severity across the insurance industry. The research cited things like a 36% rise in building material prices, a staggering 41% rise in used car prices. A resurgence of that kind of high inflation would certainly be a significant headwind for Chubb, again, impacting their cost of claims.
Exactly. So while those higher interest rates we discussed are a huge tailwind for their investment portfolio income, it's certainly not all sunshine and rainbows on the macro front. There are always these broader economic forces at play that they have to manage. However, the research suggests Chubb's business model shows remarkable resilience to a potential economic recession. That's thanks to a few factors. Firstly, the often non-discretionary nature of many P&C insurance products, businesses, and individuals still need coverage even in tough times. Secondly, their extensively diversified business mix spread across so many product lines and geographies. And thirdly, that inherently strong balance sheet we keep mentioning provides a robust cushion. Interest rates themselves, as you hinted, also have this dual impact. Yes, higher rates boost that critical investment income going forward. But rapid increases in rates can also cause temporary unrealized losses on their existing portfolio of fixed income holdings. This impacts their reported book value through something called accumulated other comprehensive income, or AOCI, essentially. It reflects temporary paper losses or gains on investments that don't affect their actual cash flow, but can make the reported book value figure fluctuate quarter to quarter. However, their tangible book value, which excludes these volatile non-cash adjustments related to interest rate marks, remains much more stable and is arguably a better measure of their core equity position.
Right. And another really fascinating area of emerging risk, but also potentially immense opportunity, is the cyber insurance market. It's clearly one of the fastest growing segments in insurance today, but it's also incredibly complex, constantly evolving, and still in many ways uncharted territory for the industry in terms of understanding the true long-term risks. And Chubb has clearly positioned itself right at the forefront as the leader in the U.S. cyber market.
Yeah, what's fascinating here, and it's a bit of a double-edged sword, is that Chubb is leading in an area with absolutely immense growth potential. The need for cyber insurance is only increasing, but it's also an area with equally immense and still somewhat unknown systemic risks. Their leadership position serves them incredibly well. They can leverage their extensive experience from handling over 23,000 cyber claims already, plus insights from the proprietary Chubb Cyber Index to inform their underwriting and risk selection in a highly data-driven way. That's a competitive advantage. However, the primary systemic risk that worries the entire industry is the potential for a widespread, simultaneous cyber event. Imagine a major cloud service provider having a catastrophic outage, or a novel, highly aggressive ransomware attack spreading globally that affects many, many policyholders all at once. The potential aggregation of risk from such an event is notoriously difficult to model accurately, and it could theoretically lead to very large, concentrated losses for the industry, including market leaders like Chubb. So while their leadership gives them a clear competitive advantage in capturing the growth in this crucial market, it also, by definition, concentrates their exposure to these potential large-scale systemic cyber events. It's a key risk they and the whole industry are actively managing and trying to get their arms around.
Okay, let's try and bring all of this together now by looking at Chubb's valuation. Given everything we've discussed, the underwriting strength, the strategic moves, the risks, what does the market currently seem to see in this company? How is it valued? If we start by looking at some standard multiple-based valuations, like the price-to-earnings or PE ratio, Chubb's trailing 12-month PE, based on the research as of roughly August 2025, is sitting somewhere around 12.0x to 12.6x. Interestingly, that actually sits in the lower to middle part of its historical PE range, which has typically been between 10x and 20x over the longer term. So based purely on recent earnings, it doesn't appear unusually expensive relative to its own history.
Okay. Then there's the price to book, or PB ratio, which compares the stock price to the company's accounting book value per share. As of August 2025, that's around 1.6x. Now, this is somewhat elevated compared to its historical average PB, which was often closer to the 1.1x to 1.4x range. That higher multiple likely reflects the market recognizing their significantly improved return on equity in recent years. Comparing it to peers, Chubb's 1.6x PB is still below a competitor like Travelers, which the research pegs around 2.1x, but it's considerably higher than AIG's PB, which sits closer to 1.1x. So it suggests the market assigns a higher value to Chubb's book equity compared to some, likely due to that consistent profitability and overall business quality we've discussed.
Right. And especially for acquisitive companies like Chubb who've done big deals, the price to tangible book value, PTBV ratio, is arguably even more crucial. because this metric strips out goodwill and other intangible assets that get created during acquisitions, giving you a cleaner view of the market value relative to their core tangible equity. Chubb's PTBV, according to the Q2 2025 figures cited, is approximately 2.4x, based on a tangible book value per share of $112.64 at that time. Now, this 2.4x is actually quite comparable to Travelers PTBV of around 2.43x, but it's notably much, much higher than AIG's PTBV, which is down around 1.3x.
Yeah, that PTBV comparison is very telling, I think. It really suggests the market values Chubb's tangible equity, the core operating assets and capital, at a significant premium compared to some peers. And that premium is likely driven by their demonstrably superior returns generated on that tangible equity. Remember that 21.6% ROT figure. It's a pretty clear signal of strong market confidence in their underlying asset quality, their proven ability to generate consistent, high-quality profits from those assets year after year, and their disciplined approach to deploying capital effectively, whether organically or through M&A. The market seems to be rewarding that consistency and quality.
And then looking specifically at their shareholder return profile, Chubb offers a forward dividend yield of about 1.4% based on recent prices and their current dividend rate. Now, while that yield itself might appear somewhat modest compared to some other sectors, its sustainability is exceptionally high. That's because their dividend payout ratio, the proportion of earnings they pay out as dividends, is very low, hovering around just 16% of earnings recently. That extremely low ratio means the dividend is incredibly well covered by profits, and importantly, there's substantial capacity for future increases, continuing that long streak.
And we simply can't overlook that impressive dividend growth history itself as part of the valuation story. That 32nd consecutive annual increase, approved back in May 2025, that places Chubb in a highly select group of companies, often called dividend aristocrats or similar, known for their unwavering commitment to returning capital to shareholders through consistently rising dividends, cycle after cycle. This long streak really underscores the stability and predictability of their underlying cash flow generation, and it signals management's long-standing dedication to consistently returning a portion of that cash flow to the company's owners. That reliability often warrants a premium valuation from income-focused investors.
Okay, and then finally, looking at it from maybe an asset-based perspective, the quality of Chubb's book value itself appears exceptionally high. Our sources specifically note their conservative reserving philosophy when setting aside funds for future claims. Management themselves were quoted as saying their loss reserves are as strong as I can remember. Okay. Now, that conservative approach might depress reported earnings slightly in the short term compared to more aggressive peers, but it significantly reduces the risk of nasty surprises down the road from having to suddenly boost reserves if claims turn out worse than expected, something that can really plague less disciplined insurers and hammer their stock price.
Right. And this raises an important question that sophisticated investors often consider. Beyond the standard metrics shown on the financial statements, what potential hidden value might be lurking on the balance sheet or embedded in the business model? One key area here is the embedded earnings power within their substantial investment portfolio, especially in this sustained higher interest rate environment. Because of the natural lag effect of reinvesting their massive cash flows at these higher rates over time, the portfolio's future income generation potential is likely significantly greater than what is reflected in its current reported yield based on historical investments. It's like a coiled spring of future earnings growth. Now, as we discussed, those mark-to-market fluctuations on the bond portfolio due to interest rate changes can impact the reported book value through AOCI in the short term, creating some noise. However, the tangible book value provides a more stable and arguably more reliable measure of their core underlying equity, and that tangible book value continues to compound handsomely over time, reflecting the true economic progress of the business. That embedded earnings power is a significant, often underappreciated asset. #outro.
So, wow. We journeyed pretty deep into Chubb's world today, haven't we? From exploring its foundational, almost obsessive underwriting discipline, to its bold, multi-billion-dollar strategic pivots into Asia, its really savvy kind of Intel inside approach to competitive threats from InsurTech, that now booming investment portfolio engine, and its consistently robust financial health and discipline management. What truly sticks out, I think, is how this company, which is rooted so firmly in a very traditional, often cyclical industry, continuously finds these innovative ways to not just survive market challenges, but to genuinely thrive, evolve, and consistently outperform most of its rivals. They really do seem to be, as the research suggests, a best-in-class operator that's effectively leveraging that powerful core underwriting engine to fund
Transformative strategic acquisitions do turbocharge their investment portfolio returns and ultimately to consistently deliver superior, resilient returns for their shareholders over the very long term.
Yeah, I agree. If we connect this back to the bigger picture, Chubb offers a really fantastic case study in strategic adaptation and disciplined execution. It demonstrates powerfully that true resilience and sustainable long-term value creation often come from more than just being good at one single thing. It's really about using that core strength, in their case, underwriting, to build multiple complementary engines for both growth and stability. Their disciplined execution over decades, combined with their proactive stance on global expansion, their innovative responses to competitive threats like Chubb Studio, it really demonstrates the power of having a consistent, thoughtful strategy and then executing it with that combination of patience in planning but impatience in action.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this deep dive, here's maybe a thought for you, our listener, to mull over as you go about your day. In a world where disruption seems constant, where industries are being upended left and right, Chubb's very deliberate long game, patiently building and defending that underwriting moat for decades, and then aggressively reinvesting the capital generated from it into both new high-growth geographies and higher-yielding assets? Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? What other traditional industries out there might be ripe for a similar kind of strategic transformation led by disciplined execution? And who are the potentially unsung disciplined operators within those industries, the ones perhaps without much fanfare today, who might be poised to lead similar shifts and create incredible long-term value in the future? Something to think about.